Les séminaires du Collège de France.
Donc aujourd'hui, on a le grand plaisir d'accueillir Gwendal Febvre. I'm going to continue my introduction in English. Gwendal made a seminal contribution to the field of topology in condensed matter physics by realizing, by demonstrating experimentally in electronic optics experiments the fractional statistics of anions, of quasi-particle excitations in the fractional quantum Hall effect. And together with the other group at Weizmann, he obtained the Berkeley Prize of the American Physical Society for this this year. I think he's the first French person to get the Berkeley Prize, which is quite a remarkable feat. Previous to that, Gwendal did his PhD at École Normale. And he just explained to me that he had spent a year and a half at Stanford during before his PhD, where he got initiated into these experimental techniques. Then he came back to ENS, and he's now a professor at Sorbonne University, I think. He also got some nice French distinctions, like the Ansel Prize, and also European ones, like a Niercy Consolidator Grant. So, Gwendal, it's a pleasure to have you here, and you're going to tell us about why anions are fractional statistics.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for having me here and the invitation. It's a great pleasure to be there, and thanks a lot for the nice introduction. So, I'm going to discuss indeed the experiments we have performed at ENS during the past years. The idea of the experiments in general is to use some analogies between the transport of electrons in these quantum Hall conductors that you have seen during the lectures and optics to implement some interferometry experiments. And using interferometry setup, you can measure phases, and in particular, be sensitive to the fractional statistics or the fractional exchange phase of these anions when you push these experiments in the fractional quantum Hall regimes. And the general geometry of these experiments is the following. So we're using two-dimensional electron gases in gallium arsenide heterostructures. So these are samples that have been around now for 40 or 50 years to study this quantum Hall and fractional quantum Hall effect. And as you have seen during the lecture, so when you reach this integer or fractional quantum Hall regime, this becomes an insulator in the bulk. So in blue, this is the two-dimensional electron gas here. Here, this is the boundaries. So you etch the sample. So this is a standard insulator there. So the two-dimensional electron gas only lives in the blue region here. And as you have seen, at the boundary, the interface between this topological insulator in the quantum Hall regime and the standard insulator, you have conducting channels that I represent in red here. And the idea is that the transport of electrons is ballistic along this edge channel, so you can really guide beams of charge in a bit in analogy with how you can guide light in optics fiber. Then a second ingredient that you need to implement these optics-like experiments is a beam splitter, and this you can realize it using these metallic gates that are deposited on top of the electron gas. So by applying a negative voltage to these gates, typically -1 volt, you will completely deplete the electron gas underneath, so this will become a standard insulating region, and the edge channels will follow the new boundaries of the sample that are defined electrostatically by these gates. And by doing that, you can bring these two counter-propagating channels close to each other, such that you will allow some tunneling of charge from one channel to the other. So this will partition the electronic current that are flowing along the edge. For example, here, this can go in this direction or be transmitted there. So the general picture representing these experiments is the one you can see on the right here, where one have sources of particles at the input. So here can be electron or anion sources in the example I will describe. And you have beam splitter that partition these input beams. And one measures the correlations at the end here, the correlations between the electrical currents that are flowing at the output of these splitter. And this is typically a setup of what is called two-particle interferometry in optics. And let me make a very brief reminder of interferometry, starting first from the optical case, where one would have in general single or two-particle interferometers, the most simplest geometry being that one, where so in optics you would have a light source at the input of this Mark Sender interferometer. You measure the light intensity at the output, and this comes from two interfering trajectories, the bottom one and the top one here, that are usually delayed by a controllable time delay tau. And the quantity that you probe in this interference between these two trajectories is actually the correlation of the field that is time shifted by this time tau here, that corresponds to the time delay between the upper and the lower trajectory. So in really one important message in the rest of the talk, in particular for probing anions, is the fact that what you measure are correlations of these fields at two different times, and this is how you will extract information on the anion statistics at the end. So we are not using this single particle interferometry, and I will speak about it at the end of this presentation. We are more using two particle interferometry. Here, the geometry is simpler. There is a single splitter with two sources of particles at the input, but the measurement is more complex. You need to measure the correlations now between the two intensities at two different times, T and T minus tau. And the idea is that in this correlation, there is also an interference between two possible trajectories that I represent here, and that comes from the fact that you don't know if the particle you detect at time T minus T in 3 comes from input 1, that would be this orange trajectory, where 1 goes to 3 and 2 goes to 4, or if the particle detected in 3 comes from input 2. And you have an interference between this green trajectory, where you have actually exchanged the two sources that are connected to the two outputs. And if you compute this interference term between these two different trajectories, it looks very similar to this one. You have now, again, the correlations of the field at these two different times, but product for input 1 and for input 2. And this is a signature of these two particle interferometry, where the two inputs play a role in this two particle interferometer setup. One celebrated experiment illustrating these two particle interference scheme is the Hongu Mandel experiment in optics, where one plugs two sources of single photons at input 1 and 2, with the possibility to tune the time delay between the arrival of the photons at this splitter here. And when you have a very large time delay, so that would be this side here, then you have random partitionings of the photons at the splitter. So sometimes you have two photons in one input, sometimes two in the other, and sometimes one in each. And this occurs randomly. And that sets for the noise. And now I'm going to introduce the language of electronics. So for this current correlation between output 3 and 4, which is basically the intensity correlation integrated on the time difference tau, so these are the cross correlation, you get this classical value that takes the value minus 1. So the minus sign comes from this, the fact that you measure cross correlation, and I will come back to that in a few slides. But this basically, this limit is random partitioning of photons at the splitter. But when you synchronize the two photons to arrive together on the splitter, you observe this strong negative cross correlation there. And that comes from the fact now that due to the bosonic statistic of photons and these two particle interferometry showing up, you always have two photons in this output or two photons in the other output. And this is an excess of particle in this output corresponding to a deficit of particle in the other one. So this gives rise to strong negative cross-correlation. So accumulation of particles bunching is seen as negative cross-correlation in these experiments. So the four fields are there. And the point is that you assume here that there are no correlations between the two sources at the input. So that's an important point. No, that there are still no correlation between... So the way to have correlation between the two inputs would be to have a single source that you would split in two and recombine there. If these two guys originate from the same source, then you would not be able to insert this bracket there. But here, it's still two different sources of photons. You have to engineer them to emit photons as indistinguishable as possible, but they are still uncorrelated, separated sources. Yeah, exactly. Thanks. So this is the optics version of this two-particle interferometry setup. And now, as you have seen during the lectures, this integer and fractional quantum rule regime allow you to really implement analogs of these experiments. So again, I will not repeat, but this is the celebrated integer quantum rule trace, where you have here, for integer filling factor, the longitudinal resistance that drops, which means that this becomes typically insulating, and you have ballistic transport at the edge. So you can guide these electron beams. And then the next ingredient is again this, what we call this quantum point contact, so these gates that you put here. And here I'm showing you typical traces that we measure. When one measures the conductance, so you apply a DC bias voltage, so you bias this channel here. So current flows there ballistically to this output. So first, if you do not energize this gate, the conductance takes the quantized value 2e squared over h, so this is nu equal to, you have two of these edge channels carrying the charge there. And when you start applying a negative gate voltage, then you will selectively backscatter this edge channel from here to here, so the conductance drops to 1e squared over h when only one edge channel is transferred, and to zero, where basically here, this becomes insulating and both these channels are reflective. And the idea is to tune this gate voltage, for example, at this point here, where you have typically a 50% probability to be transmitted there or to be back reflected there, which gives you this tunable beam splitter now for electronic excitations in the integer quantum Hall regime, as opposed to the photonic case that we saw before. And the first of these experiments probing these analogies with optics, they have been called electron Hambury-Brown and twist type experiments, where again in this, so this is the experiments done in the group of Christian Schoenberger in the late 90s. So similar experiments was performed in the group of Yoshim Yamamoto in Stanford, where I discovered these techniques. Apply this DC voltage to this edge channel, and you measure the cross correlation between the output beams there. And the way to understand this experiment is really to see that due to the fermionic statistics of electrons incoming there, when you apply this DC voltage, you can view this incoming beam of electrons as electrons arriving one after the other, each state being populated exactly by one particle due to the fermionic statistics, and with a typical time separation that's related to the voltage H divided by EV. And each of these electrons will be selectively either transmitted, back reflected there, or transmitted there. And as a result, you have really a binomial process to compute the fluctuations of particles at the output with this T1 minus T binomial law times the number of electrons that are incoming in the input. So this is the fluctuations of number of particles. You can compute the fluctuations of the current, which is simply the charge of the particles divided by some measurement time on which you measure the number of particles that have been transmitted. And as a result, you get that the fluctuations of the current here, you still have this T1 minus T process, the incoming current, but here comes the charge of the particles, and that will be important in the following. And actually, you already know that in the fractional regime, the fact that the charge appears there allows you to measure the fractional charge of electrons, as we will see in a few slides. So here, basically, the idea is that you measure this autocorrelation, so these fluctuations that are proportional to the incoming current, and that is this classical random partitioning that I described just before. And if you look at the cross correlation there, so as I've told you, it's negative, exactly with the same slope. And the way you can view that is that for each time there is one electron that has been reflected here, there is a missing electron there, so you have perfectly negative correlation between the two output beams. So this is why you have this cross correlation, where if you define this Fano factor, so the normalization of this cross correlation by this random fluctuation, it takes this value minus one. So characteristic of this classical binomial process at the beam splitter. So now what we did after these experiments, sometime after, typically 10 years after, is still in this integer quantum Hall regime to try to implement now really the analog of this Rongomandel type experiments by engineering these single electron sources. So these are quantum dots, so small islands of two-dimensional electron gas, in such the size is so small that it quantizes the number of electrons that you can put inside each of these dots. And by applying a step voltage on these sources, you can selectively generate or ionize, remove one electron from this island that is then generated in this 2D electron gas. And these electrons will then propagate and collide on this splitter, and you can again tune the time delay between the emission of these sources. So it's really implementing with electrons the analog of the Hongu-Mandel experiment that we've just seen with bosons, photons. And you see, for long time delay, the same minus one that this classical random partitioning, so these four possible outcomes. But now when you trigger the source to emit electrons at the same time, so to collide at the same time, then you see a peak in the cross-correlation, and this is due to the fermionic statistics of the electrons, of course, that favor this mechanism where exactly one electron is emitted at each output of the source, and this is a suppression of the fluctuations at the output, so the cross-correlation should be suppressed, so they are not perfectly suppressed in the experiment. So here what you see is that bunching packets of particles leads to negative cross-correlation, anti-bunching leads to suppression of the cross-correlation in this experiment. At a more technical level, again you see this characteristic. If you were to compute really the cross-correlation in these experiments, so it's now two-electron interferometry, so you measure correlations of these fermionic fields that have now this fermionic commutation relation, and this is where you can see the fact that you have this anti-bunching showing up in this experiment. Okay, so this is bosonic, fermionic cases. Now the purpose of this presentation is to extend that to the fractional quantum Hall case and the anionic regime. So this is the trace that you have already seen, so the very nice trace that we show show the very nice signature of the fractional quantum Hall effect. So this is the whole resistance here and the longitudinal resistance here as a function of magnetic field. The low field plateaus here correspond to the integer quantum regime, 2, 3, 4, where you have standard electronic excitations that I just described before. And then the regime of larger field, now you have all these plateaus corresponding to the fractional quantum Hall regime, and where all these cases, so these fractional quantum Hall states, they will host as elementary excitations, not electrons, but anions with fractional charge and fractional statistics. And actually, each of these states hosts different varieties of anions characterized by different numbers for this fractional charge and statistics. And I'm going to focus on the simplest one, the Laughlin state, that's at one third there, where the charge is one third, that's been measured long time ago. But the statistics is also given by this number, so it's pi over 3, meaning that you have fractional statistics. And one important thing, and actually that this is how the fractional statistics of anions will show up in this experiment, the fact that this phi is fractional implies that 2 phi is not a multiple of 2 pi. And actually what we probe in these experiments is what we call this braiding phase, so this theta, so twice phi, which corresponds to a double exchange, or to what happens when you move one particle around one another in a full loop like that. So if you do half a loop, you have exchanged the two positions of the two particles, this is phase pi over 3, but when you do the full loop, then you have phase 2 pi over 3. And actually, so these anions, the message, one of the messages of this the talk on, is that these anions, they keep a memory of this loop operation or this braiding operation, which is not a multiple of 2 pi. So this is a phase for these abelian anions that I will only discuss in the context of this seminar. In a more general context of non-abelian anions, this can be a unitary operation on the system, and this is what triggers a lot of interest for these non-abelian anions, the possibility to really make some manipulation on the system by simply braiding these anion excitation. Okay, so but I will focus on the one-third case here. And now, how do you probe really these anion excitations? So again, the general two-particle interferometry setup will be to plug some sources here at the input of this quantum point contact that is used at the beam splitter. And the fact that these two channels are close to each other, this will induce some tunneling mechanism, either from this side to this side or from this side to this side. So here I've represented one tunneling event from 1 to 2. So this corresponds to one particle of charge Q being transferred here, leaving a missing particle there. So a tunneling event is a particle hole excitation in the system. And the nature of the particles depend on the nature of the state through which you tunnel. So in the integer quantum Hall regime, you will have electrons tunneling. But in the fractional quantum Hall regime, as you tunnel through these strongly correlated states, you will have anions that tunnel there. So typically, here, E over 3, and with fractional statistics, pi over 3. And now, if you are in the fractional quantum Hall regime, before that, let me show you how we probe, so in our experiments, the presence of this fractional quantum Hall state. So we apply some small voltage there, and we measure the current that is backscattered from this input 1 to this output 4 here. So if the electrons follow, if the current follows the edge channel in red here, all the currents that are generated in here should be absorbed in 3 when there is no backscattering in the system, meaning when this is a good insulator. So when you sweep the field here, what you see is that this backscattering probability from 1 to 4, it's suppressed anytime you see an integer state or these fractional states, and in particular, this state 1/3. So that shows you that here you have indeed the presence of your fractional or integer state here in the bulk. Now, if you sit, for example, at filling factor 3 here, and you start using this gate to put these channels in close proximity, then you will start to partition the current that's incoming there and generate some noise at the output. So that's what's represented here. This is the noise at the output at filling factor 3, so autocorrelation and cross-correlation as a function of the incoming current. And this slope here tells you that indeed you have electrons that are transmitted at this quantum point contact when you partition the incoming current in the integer case. And you do, so this was here for filling factor 3, you do the same in the same sample for filling factor 1/3, and now you see that this slope is reduced by a factor 3, showing that now you have indeed anions that are tunneling at this quantum point contact. So this is exactly the analog to the experiments that Antoine has shown you in the previous lecture. So this pioneer experiment performed at the Weizmann Institute and in SEASAC Lab by Christian Glatzky and Motsi Heibloom, where really this demonstrated, so this slope 1/3, demonstrated the existence of the anions as the elementary excitations in this fractional quantum Hall regime. So that's for the fractional case. So now we to assess the presence of anions in the conductor and to probe their fractional charge. Now, how to probe the statistics? So the idea would be to use again this type of two-particle interferometry experiments where one would plug two sources of anions excitation at the input of a beam splitter, a little bit in the same spirit as what was done for two-photon interferometry or two-electron interferometry. The problem is that we don't know how to emit exactly a single anion with unit probability in the conductor yet. We know in principle how one could do it, but it's not been implemented as a tool that you can really plug in this experiment, a single anion source that would trigger single anion emission in the conductor. So the idea of the Rosno, Lefkiski, and Halperin in this very important paper was to propose a way to realize these two anion interferometry experiments, but replacing deterministic sources of particles by stochastic sources of particles. And as you will see, it shows up that even with stochastic sources, you can still find some signatures or probe some signatures of the anion statistics in these experiments. So the idea is to use the same spirit as this. So when you plug a DC source at the input of this point contact there, you know that there will be some random generation of anion excitation from this channel to this one. And if this transparency is small, you even know the statistics of these events is going to implement a Poissonian source of anions in the system. So the idea is to engineer with this input quantum point contact tuned by this DC voltage, a Poissonian source of anions, that is going to be emitted here and propagate towards this beam splitter there, and to do the same in this other input, where here a Poissonian stream of anions is going to be generated by tunneling events at this second input quantum point contact. So this is schematically represented here. So these sources here randomly emit anion excitation that are then partitioned by this bean flitter. And we are again going to measure the cross-correlation normalized by this classical random partitioning limits to define this Fano factor P. So let me directly show you the results. And first, we benchmark the operation of this two-particle interferometer again in the integer case, where we know that electron excitations are going to be emitted by these input sources, these stochastic input sources. And this is what we measure as the cross-correlation at the output, as a function of here, the transmission probabilities or the emission probability for these sources, which is something that we can tune by simply playing on the voltage we apply on this point contact at the input. So here, the message is that whatever the emission probability that we choose there, we always observe the same type of behavior, so these are the cross correlation at the output, as a function of the input electron current that we derive at the input of this splitter here, so the sum of these two currents, I1 plus I2 here. And the cross correlations are always very close to zero in this experiment. And remember, the message was that fermionic anti-bunching, the fact that electrons will avoid each other, results in a suppression of the cross-correlation at the output. So it means that despite the fact that we have stochastic emitters, the sort of fermionic nature of electrons is still observed in this experiment by the suppression of this cross-correlation for all these sets of the transmission probability. So this is for filling factor 2. You can do it for filling factor 3. It's been done in other experiments, for example, in the group of Frédéric Pierre and an author at C2N, where consistently everybody sees that in the electron case, you observe suppression of cross-correlation that's related to fermionic anti-bunching. And now, again, what's nice is that you simply go to higher values of the field with the same geometry and same sample, and you again measure this cross-correlation, but in the fractional case, one-third, with now, here, and that's important, a very small, so deep in the Poissonian case, where the probability that anions are emitted at the input is very, very small. So that's a good question. So so that there are several answers to that. The first one is that if you go back to the triggered case that I mentioned at the beginning, where you really have ways to selectively emit one electron in each input, this is done by ionizing these electron sources. You can actually do the reverse process, where this source will absorb one electron that is emitted from the input. And you have ways to actually engineer collision between electron and hole type excitations that are incoming on the splitter. And then you should see, if this physics is driven by interaction, you should see now the attraction between the electron and the hole, and there you see basically no effect, random partitioning, which means that this Coulomb interaction do not play a role there. There is another important thing that actually in this limit, and I will come back to that because it's important, this is a very peculiar limit that you can probe both in the electron case or the anion case, where the emission probability is very small. So you are in the very dilute, extremely dilute limit, where actually the interpretation of this experiment in terms of collision, two particles being present, is not valid because the probability that you have two particles present in the system is the square of that. And that should become very, very small in this very dilute limit. So even more in this limit, can you neglect these two particle Coulombic repulsion effect? Yeah. So that brings me to the fact that this is now in a very diluted limit, where one should disregard the possibility to have two anions emitted at the two input of the system, one by source one and one by source two. However, what we observe is now this very strong negative correlation. So qualitatively, there is a clear signature that you have a distinct behavior in the anion case compared to the electron case. And again, if you remember what I said at the beginning, so negative correlation means formation of packets of particles. So you tend to accumulate some excess charge in a given output and the deficit of charge in the other output. And this would lead to negative correlation in the system. So somehow, we have such formation of packets of charge. However, coming back to the previous question, it cannot be interpreted in the same way as in the bosonic case, where This would result from one anion being emitted at input 1, bunching with another anion being emitted at input 2, because these processes, they go like Ts squared, and this very dilute limit, in principle, they should be excluded. So it's an effect, formation of packets, that only requires one anion to be present at one input to show up. So it's very specific to this anion case. And now I'm going to try to explain to you how it shows up from these two particle interfermi language that I introduced at the beginning. So just before that, to see it even more, when you increase this emission probability, so you go to less dilute beams of anions, you actually still see this negative correlation, but the strength that's encoded in this Fano factor, this slope, is actually less important compared to the very dilute limit. So it goes really in the other way around compared to what one would naively believe from the bosonic case where this bunching mechanism would come from two anions being emitted at input one and input two of this collider. This is actually consistently observed both at the qualitative level, so this is the experiment performed in the group of the C2N in similar conditions where you have again this negative correlation that show up. This is the experiment in the Weizmann Institute that is slightly different, where actually you only emit particles in a given input there, and you measure now the autocorrelation or the fluctuations of this current here that shows very strong fluctuations, super Poissonian fluctuation, and again this super Poissonian fluctuation can be viewed as the fact that you have packets of anions that are aggregated together at the output of this splitter. So this is for the qualitative picture of the formation of this packet. At the quantitative level, this Fano factor, so this slope, agree with each other and are all consistent with what you would expect for fractional phase statistics of 2 pi over 3, but I will come back to that. So before, now let's go back to this two particle interferometry language in the context of the fractional case. So these two particle interferometry experiments, again, the general geometry is you have a partitioner, so that's this point contact there, and you have in general two sources of particles that are plugged at the input of this partitioner. And what I will introduce, so it's more convenient in this fractional case, are these rates, so these tunneling rates, again describing this tunnel process from 1 to 2, so this I call gamma plus, so creating a particle there and a hole there, and the reverse process, gamma minus, creating a particle there and a hole there. And the reason why you introduce these rates is because they are directly related to the measurement that you can perform, so the observables that you can measure, the tunneling current there, that's clearly the difference between these two rates that drive particles in opposite direction, and the fluctuations, so the noise of these tunneling currents that are related to the square of the fluctuations of the current. So this is how you can understand that now for the noise you actually sum these two rates in these two different directions to get the noise. So now we introduce these rates specifically in this language of the fractional quantum Hall regime, let's say. But if you look at the expression of these rates, which is actually in general a bit complex to compute, but if you just look at it, you recover this generic two-particle interferometry setup or expression. So these rates that you can view, you can understand that the noise here, that would be the sum of these two rates, it's again the correlations of these fields at two different times, product for source one and product for source two. And you can understand it from this general picture being again a generic two-particle interferometry experiment. But now it involves anion being exchanged between the two outputs, so it means that you are measuring the correlation now between these anion fields that have these peculiar exchange properties, so these anionic commutation relation that will show up in these experiments. So how can you see it? So let's compute it first in a very simple case. So let's compute this correlation there in the case where I do not plug any source at the input. So the two inputs are at equilibrium, which means that I have the ground state here, there and there, I'm not sending anything. But even in the ground state, these correlations are non-zero. So technically, they are described by the Cairo-Littinger liquid theory here, which is the fact that you have a strongly correlated channels there that have some correlation that are present even at equilibrium. And you can view that as also some fluctuations. So there are some quantum fluctuations of particles that are exchanged at this splitter, even at equilibrium in the system. And now, what happens when you plug a source? So let's assume that just to compute it, we are able to actually generate one anion excitations that will cross the quantum point contact, so this splitter, at a given time t naught. And I choose this time t naught to be precisely between the time t and t minus tau that are the correlations of these two fields. So now, these vacuum or equilibrium correlation, they are going to be dressed by the presence of this additional anion excitations that cross the QPC at this time t naught. And you can compute these correlations and view it actually as the overlap. So if I split this correlation in two, you can view it as the overlap between this state here in orange and this state here in green. So these are the two states that will interfere with each other. So here, in this state, you can view this blue anion here. This is actually the creation of the anion that is transferred from 2 to 1 at time t minus tau. And this one is the anion that is emitted by the source that crosses the QPC at time t naught. And here, as t naught is larger than time t minus tau, first the blue anion tunnels there, and then the red anion crosses the QPC at time t naught. And you measure the overlap of this quantity between this guy, where now it's the other way around, because time t naught is smaller than t. So now first the red anion crosses the QPC, and then the blue anion is transferred from channel 2 to channel 1. So this interference process involves actually tunneling events where you have exchanged the relative position of the anion that tunnels from 2 to 1 and the one that's emitted by the source there. And if you compute the relative phase carefully between these two events, it's actually it corresponds to a double exchange, so it's actually the braiding phase between the blue anion and the red anion that should equal phase 2 pi over 3 in the fractional quantum Hall effect. So here in these two particle interferometry, the fact that you measure correlations at two different times allows you to actually probe the statistics of anions from the fact that the anions that you emit from the source, they can cross the QPC before or after anions are transferred from channel 2 to channel 1, and you are sensitive to the relative phase between these different processes. So now, so this is where you exactly emit one anion at time t naught crossing the QPC. So the more generic expression so involves here the equilibrium correlation that are present in the system. So I will not have time, I will not have time, but in these experiments, you can actually probe this correlation. And it's interesting because it's a way to probe the strongly correlated system. So this correlation actually decay on long times, and that's some feature that's related to the chiral Luttinger liquid, so the fact that you have a strongly correlated system in the presence, in the system. So that's probing this correlation is also a way to probe fractional quantum Hall state, but I will not insist too much on that. This here is the most interesting term. So these are the braiding mechanism related to the particles that you emit from the source and the one that tunnel there. And this here depends on the nature of the source. So it's the number of particles that are generated by the source. I discussed previously the ideal case where one would be able to emit anions precisely at a given time. In the experiment, this is actually a stochastic variable. So this fluctuates randomly, but you know that this is governed by Poissonian statistics in the system. So you can compute this average braiding phase factor in the case of Poissonian emission. So now, you see that these rates, they are sensitive to this braiding mechanism. And from that, you can compute the Fano factor. And this is what I told you, that at the quantitative level, this minus 2, the slope here of minus 2, is what you expect for a braiding statistics of 2 pi over 3 for these anions. So this is what confirms the expected anionic statistics of anions at filling factor 1/3. Now, just to speak more of the qualitative picture, so here, what happens is that I've told you that you have two possibilities for tunneling. This rate gamma plus, that corresponds to the fact that, okay, I emit anions, red anions in input 1, and sometimes this triggers some tunneling mechanism from 1 to 2, so meaning that one other anion excitation is transferred from particle 1 to from channel 1 to channel 2. And this is what I would call a standard tunneling mechanism, where particle tunnels, so I emit particle in one, and that triggers tunneling mechanism from one to two. But in the case of anions, this reverse tunneling process becomes actually comparable with this one. And this reverse tunneling process corresponds to the fact that I emit anions in input one, and this triggers a tunneling mechanism in the reverse direction, where one anion jumps from two to form a packet of two anions in this output, leaving a whole missing anion in this output there. And this is clearly, now you see this negative cross-correlation that comes from these two possibilities, where here you accumulate a packet of two anions there and a missing anion here. And this gives rise to this negative cross-correlation, and you can understand that this survives even if I go to very dilute anion beams, because this is only triggered by the presence of one anion there. I do not need to emit anything there to trigger this formation of packets of two anions in the output. So this is why, even in the very dilute limit, you observe the formation of packets of anions, and that actually signals this reverse process, tunneling process that shows up in the anion case. And importantly, if you go back to the electron case where you have no braiding that is present, so then you actually recover in the electron case that only this forward tunneling process is allowed. You can never have one electron that jumps from here to here to form a packet of two electrons. You can already understand it that it would be forbidden by polyexclusion principle that these two pairs of electrons form. But in general, you can also see here that it results from the trivial braiding properties of electrons in the system. And this is another way of understanding why this cross-correlation stay close to zero in both our experiments or the experiments in C2N, where only the forward tunneling process is allowed. Maybe I will comment that briefly. So I think you've seen that during the lecture of Antoine, that even in the fractional case, so at filling factor 1/3, depending on how you tune this point contact there, you can selectively have anion or electron emission in the system. And the way to do that is that if this here is, you do not pinch it too much, you are in the weak backscattering regime, so you only bring these two channels in close proximity to allow some backscattering, but the backscattering probability is very small, then you tunnel through the fractional quantum Hall regime there, and you have anion emission, and this is where you should have this non-trivial braiding showing up in this experiment. Now, you can also pinch this very strongly so that this becomes a standard insulator there. So that corresponds to this picture that I took again from Glatley's presentation in the Poincaré seminar some time ago, where now the tunneling will occur with strong probability. So backscattering is actually very strong, and tunneling now will occur here through a standard insulator, and that should correspond to electron tunneling in the system. And actually, when you do that, so this is the backscattering probability that, again, by playing on this gate voltage, you can tune to be here very large. So this is close to 0.8 there. There are some specificities of these chiral Luttinger liquids against the presence of this strong correlation, such that when you increase the voltage that you apply to this guy, this will always decay like that. So you start in the strong backscattering regime, but when you increase the voltage that you apply, you go back to the weak backscattering regime here, and you can measure that by this transmission backscattering probability going to large value, to small values when you increase the voltage. So you actually go from this picture to this one. And what you see, so this is, there are lots of curves there, but this red curve is the noise that is generated by this input quantum point contact that's consistent with charge E in the integer quantum Hall regime, so electrons emitted in the integer quantum Hall regime. This is the slope E over 3 that corresponds to charge E over 3 in the fractional quantum Hall regime. And now, these navy points here, it starts here following charge E. So this is the picture where here you transmit electrons in the system. And then for larger bias, you actually evolve towards charge E over 3. And this is because in the same experiment, you go from this strong backscattering regime to the weak backscattering regime. So you change the nature of the objects that are emitted there by tuning this voltage here. And what you observe, so it's more qualitative than quantitative, but it's rather nice that for the region that corresponds to electron emission, the cross correlation are actually slightly positive. So again, it's reminiscent of the fact that you have more anti-bunching effect that show up. But when you move to the case where you restore anion emission by the sources, you recover the strong negative correlation that show now again the formation of these packets that are related to the non-trivial braiding of anions. So here, in the same experiment where you tune even in the fractional quantum regime, electrons with trivial braiding to anions with non-trivial braiding, you can actually observe it qualitatively from these two distinct features for electron case and anion case. Okay. So now I will completely skip that, but just tell you just spend a few minutes or 1 minute to explain you what we are doing now. So I told you that so ideally one would like to control this braiding phase factor, so the braiding mechanism that show up. You can control them in principle if you are able to emit one anion excitation at a given time that will cross the QPC at a controllable time T0. And I told you that we don't know how to emit a quantized stream of anions, let's say, generate a current pulse that would exactly contain one anion excitations with unit probability. So we don't know how to do that. There are ideas how to do that, but it's not been implemented experimentally. What we know how to do is how to mimic this process, to generate something at the edge that is very close to the genuine emission of one anion excitation in the system. And one anion excitation in the system, you can get it from one tunneling event, as represented here, that would basically shift the density of charge at the edge by exactly a charge E over 3 that will be localized in time. What you can do is apply a pulse to shape the edge density here by applying a voltage pulse that has a very short temporal width, which is a few tens of picoseconds, and which you control the amplitude such that the charge contained by this pulse would be exactly E over 3. And of course, it's not quantized, so it's going to be E over 3 plus or minus epsilon. But at the end, it will emulate or have exactly similar properties as a genuine anion excitation that would be emitted in the system. And this is a way to study this braiding effect in these experiments in time domain by generating pulses that contain exactly one anion excitation, but you can also generate pulses that contain three anion excitations, which in the fractional case would be the electron case. So you can compare situations where braiding would be present for anion excitations to braiding being absent by emitting anion-like pulse or electron-like pulse. And we actually use these Rangoumandel experiments to probe now the dynamics of charge transfer at this quantum point contact. And what we observe is that this braiding effect, they lead to some memory in the system such that tunneling occurs on longer time scale when you have anion excitations compared to the electron case. And this reflects the width of the tunneling current in the system that is short in the electron case and that can be twice larger in the anion case. So I will not enter into the details, but just to show you that when you basically generate anion-type excitations at the input of some tunnel coupler or some scatterer of anion excitations, this braiding mechanism, they can show up as memory effects such that the dynamics of current tunneling from one edge to the other can be much longer when these braiding effects are present and are actually now related not to the width of the pulses that you send, but more to the time correlations that are present at the edge that are necessary to erase this correlation in the system. So this actually is governed by temperature and what we call the scaling dimension that governs the correlation at the edge. So it's another way to probe both fractional statistics of anions, but also the specific temporal correlation that exists in this chiral Luttinger liquid. So, okay, this is really going very fast for this, but just to let you know that this is a very rich physics that shows up when you study the scattering of these anion excitations at these point contacts, and when you do it in these time-resolved experiments where you can really generate pulses at the input. Okay, so let me skip that to go back to this notion of interferometry in the next 5 minutes. Because I've discussed extensively these cases, so one splitter that exchanges these anion excitations, two sources of particles, can be anions, can be electrons, so you can tune that, to probe the braiding phase of these excitations by measuring current correlations at the output. So this is the two particle interferometry setup. I spent a lot of time describing it because these are the experiments that we do in the lab. But there are obviously, if interferometry can probe braiding statistics, then clearly single particle interferometry should do the job as well. And this is now an analog of a Fabry-Perot interferometer in the quantum Hall integer or fractional quantum Hall regime. And the way it works is, again, you apply some voltage bias to this edge channel. Now you have a first of this point contact such that particles can be reflected there, or they can enter this cavity, be reflected there, make one loop, and be transmitted here. And in principle, you can have many of these loops occurring in this cavity, as in Fabry-Perot. But here, in this experiment, for simplicity, you can imagine that you tune these point contacts in this weak backscattering. So this is actually what you need, actually, to have anion being transferred at these point contacts, such that you can only take into account this direct reflection and one loop in the system. So when you do that, the first thing that you probe in the presence of the magnetic field, the phase that you will accumulate here, is the Aronoff-Bohm phase, as been discussed in the lectures, that depends on the total magnetic flux divided by the number of flux quantum that you accumulate there. So this leads to these stripes in the integer quantum Hall regime at tuning factor nu equal 1, that you can see either, so this is actually the oscillation of the output current that's driven either by changing the magnetic field there that change the flux inside this loop, or by applying this gate voltage here that change the area, so that also change the flux inside the loop, but in an electrostatic way. And this, by controlling these two knobs, you see this interference pattern for the output current. Now, if you move, so this was done in the group of Mike Manfra in the US, if you move this to the fractional case, and it's actually very hard to make these experiments in the fractional case, then you see that the periodicity of these stripes in magnetic field is modified. And this is because now the particles that are interfering, they have charge E over 3 and not charge E. So the Aronoff-Bohm phase that you accumulate, it probes the charge of the particle. So it's actually another way for measuring the fractional charge of these anions in these experiments. Now, what happens is that in addition, when you change the magnetic field, sometimes some anion excitation should appear in the bulk of the system. And this should lead to an additional phase that you pick up due to the fact that in addition to the Aronoff-Bohm phase, now you also move one anion around one another. So you should accumulate this braiding phase theta that's related now to the braiding properties of these anions. And actually, this was what people tried to realize for decades, and what was extremely hard to do, due to the fact that this is a closed geometry. So without going into the details, our geometry of two particle interferometry is open, so that you never trap particles in a closed, in a small box. Here, this is the case, you trap these particles, when an anion goes inside the cavity, you change the number of particles trapped inside the cavity. And this leads right to strong Coulomb interaction effect now, that sort of conspire against you to change the area of the loop whenever you add particles in the system. And when you do that, due to this Coulomb interaction effect, you actually suppress this interesting braiding signature that you should observe. And this is why these experiments were not successful for quite a long time. And the way they managed to solve this problem here is through a very nice fabrication trick for these heterostructures. So you see that, okay, I'm presenting the two-dimensional electron gas like that. Okay, here you have a two-dimensional electron gas. Actually, it results for a lot of engineering and a lot of know-how for fabricating these heterostructures, where you have all these different layers that are grown atomic layer by atomic layer. And here, in that case, they actually have three two-dimensional electron gases. The one in the center is the one on which you perform the experiments. And the two ones here are used to screen efficiently the Coulomb interaction in the system. It's like the system is enclosed in a box of two screening layers that will basically screen this problem of Coulomb interaction I was mentioning before. And this is how they managed to observe this jump here in the phase there, which value agrees with the 2 pi over 3 that we also measure in the two particle interferometry experiments. And you only observe this jump when this Coulomb interaction has been efficiently screened. So now, as we've seen, there are very nice experiments. So this was done in gallium arsenide. Now this is also done in graphene, where it's much easier to put gates due to the really 2D nature, intrinsic 2D nature of graphene. It's even much more easier to put metallic gates in close proximity, such as to screen this interaction and observe again the similar features in graphene. So that brings me to the conclusion. So the idea, really the idea is that you have ballistic transport in integer or fractional quantum Hall regime. You have point contacts that allow to implement partitioners or scatterers of particles. And with that, combining that, you can do interferometry. Fabry-Perot, Rambery-Brandtwist, pick your favorite interferometer. It's probably been realized in these electronic analogs. Now, lots of it has been done in the integer case in electronics to basically show up, to exhibit the wave nature of particles in this conductor, the fact that you have interferometry that governs the conductance of these systems. So that's one thing that's really strongly analogous to optics. But I think it becomes even more interesting when you go to the possibility of these conductors to have very strong interaction between the particles and now use these interferometers as a way to probe these emerging excitations that exist in the 2D systems that are these anions. And two-particle interferometry or single-particle interferometry, now in single work, gallium arsenide, graphene, show consistent results for this statistic 2 pi over 3 at the filling factor 1/3. So you can also probe the dynamics, so this I really said only a few words, the dynamics of these anion excitations from these experiments, and actually it's also sensitive to these braiding, to the braiding effects. Now, I think the idea is really to move to, and it started, to move to all these zoo of fractional quantum Hall state to probe all these different varieties of anions, and in particular, try to implement these experiments in the non-abelian case where can one probe the non-abelian excitations or the non-abelian nature of these excitations from these experiments. And actually, there is one technique, just to finish, that I did not discuss at all, that is thermal transport. So in these systems, you have, I mostly discussed charged excitations, but you also have neutral excitations that do not carry charge, but that carry only energy, and that you can probe from this thermal transport that have been pioneered in the group of Frédéric Pierre, that François Parmentier is doing on graphene at INS, and that have provided the first signature, I think, of non-abelian physics for this filling factor 5-Rolf in the group of Motti and Bloom in the Weizmann Institute for Science. And just to show you that there are many, many people involved, many of them in the audience, actually. So the people in the group at LPNS, so Gerbo and François, who joined us recently, Jean-Marc. Of course, the PhD students who have performed all these various experiments I discussed, so Hugo, Melanie, and now Hong Yu, which is studying these dynamical experiments with anion pulses. The fact that all of this relies on very high quality samples in gallium arsenide, and for that, we have had the support for a very, very long time of the C2N, who grows fantastic samples for these experiments, thanks to Young, Ulf, and Antonella. And lots of theory support from, in particular, the discussion with many, many groups, but École Normale in Lyon, LPS Orsay, and CPT Marseille, in particular, for these pulse experiments I briefly discussed. And with that, thanks again a lot for the very nice invitation and the possibility to present you these experiments. Thanks.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.